Jews are indispensable for a good, compassionate, just, and caring world. And so are Palestinians. Thank you.
Former South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu, speaking recently at the Old South Church in Boston, along with Noam Chomsky and others, at a conference sponsored by the Palestinian Christian organization Sabil. If you'd like a copy of today's broadcast, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. The transcripts will also be available there, as well as the video and audio podcasts. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharifa Belkadus, Aaron Mate, Anjali Kamat, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Ricardo Lobo, Kizzy Cox, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks also to Becca Staley and Hugh Grant and Samantha Chambly, John Randolph, Jose Miranda, Laura Chipley, and Vesta Godars. Again, our website, democracynow.org. Special belated happy birthday to Samantha Chambly as she says goodbye to her 20s. On December 15th, I'll be at the Washington Convention Center celebrating 30th anniversary of WPFW. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jim with today's edition of Concert Billboard for Tuesday, November 27th. At the Dix Hill Center for the Performing Arts, it's mostly barbershop with the Five Towns College a cappella ensembles, the Long Island Sound Chorus, and the Greater Nassau Adelines Chorus. At Union Square in Holbrook is Down in the Dumps and Brick Fright. And that's at 236 Union Avenue. In the city at the Bowery Ballroom is Sandra Lurch and Dan Wilson. Playing the Highline Ballroom is Tinariwen. Something like that. Playing Mercury Lounge, it's Maritime and the 1 a.m. Radio and Statehood. For Wednesday, November 28th at the Dix Hill Center for the Performing Arts, it's the Five Towns College Chamber Orchestra. And at Deep Wells Mansion in St. James is Byron Zanos. In the city for Wednesday at Pianos is the Jaguar Club. That's a 10 p.m. show. Coming up this Thursday, November 29th at the Stoller Center is taller sometimes when you're looking up. Like when you're at the bottom of the Stoller Center, it looks taller. At the Stoller Center at Stony Brook University on Thursday is the Emerson String Quartet. Playing the Blue Restaurant in Blue Point, it's Nacho Mama's Band. And at Barbecue in Patchogue, it's Doug Harmonica McLean. And coming up this Friday, November 30th, at the Village Pub Lindenhurst, it's Lethe and Dropface, Demised, and Crotch Rot. Ooh, yeah, Crotch Rot. Oh, that's disgusting. And the Spoon Coffee House in Lindenhurst is the Katie Perlman Band. At IMAC in Huntington is the Peter White Christmas with, guess who? Peter White. And at the Brickhouse Brewery in Patchogue is Sore Thumb. And there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up this Saturday, December 1st, at Diggers in Riverhead is Buttered Soul. And at Mickey Moe's Cafe in Woodmere, it's a Cooley's Anemia Research Benefit with Retro 69. And if you want to know about these shows and you have no idea what I just said, go to a website at WUSB.FM and click on Concert Billboard. And here's the thought of the day from Mark Twain, and he said, "The government is merely a servant, merely a temporary servant. It cannot be its prerogative to determine what is right and what is wrong and decide who is a patriot and who isn't. Its function is to obey orders, not originate them." So get rid of the monsters that you just elected. And thanks for listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is 6:02, time for Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. I just hit the trifecta coming into this place. What does that mean? Well, basically, three things happened in quick succession, all of which involved SUVs doing something really stupid. And you know me. I'm always going on about how SUVs are, in fact, the personification of stupid. Can a vehicle be a personification? I don't know. But if it could be, they would be. Now, in this particular case, I just want to, within 30 seconds, all of this happened. Four-way stop signs, you know what those are, right? Four roads, or an intersection, an X intersection, whatever you want to call it. You're supposed to stop and let the other person go if they got there first. That's sort of how it works. So the people to the left of me went, and then it was my turn. Except the SUV behind them figured it was his turn. Why not? I'm big. I can push my way through. Well, that didn't fly. And then right after that, I was making a turn off of a highway onto an entrance. And this guy was trying to merge onto the highway from the right-hand lane. And he figured that he would race me for some reason. And it almost resulted in a horrible, horrible mess because, you know, what happens when I get to the point where I'm supposed to turn to the right and he's still racing me in the right-hand lane, which is now a shoulder and no longer a lane for him to be in at all. That didn't work out either. And then finally, it actually happened here at the north entrance of campus. Some bozo decided he was going to make a U-turn right at the top of the intersection where there's no stop sign. And that could have caused all kinds of mayhem had certain people not been a bit more cautious. So, yeah, wow, it's out in force tonight. But I made it despite the efforts of the SUV lobby to keep me from getting here and speaking out against their very existence. Yes, and, you know, I also... I'm guilty of this. When I say SUV, I sort of include minivan in with that. I know they're not really technically SUVs, but they're still big vehicles that are much bigger than you need them to be, and the people behind them, behind the wheel, usually don't know what they're doing and cause all kinds of problems. So by default, I would just consider that an SUV. Now, truck drivers, on the other hand, truck drivers are obviously orders of magnitude above SUV drivers. Yes, they're big. They're big, they're bulky, but they tend to drive in a sane manner. Of course, there are exceptions. But usually you have to have sort of a special license to drive one of those vehicles, whereas people are hopping straight from economy cars into these huge mammoth vehicles, not knowing what they're doing. And it's fodder for all kinds of complaining and... storytelling that we do here in this program, but there won't be an SUV in the news feature. That was it. Just a little personal thing that happened within the last 20 minutes. I'd much rather talk about what's going on in the world, the real world of simpletons and idiots that aren't behind wheels at the moment. You see Bush today? You see George W. Bush? He was wearing reading glasses. Yeah, it was part of this this whole Annapolis summit. I love the summits that we have in this country. Dayton, Annapolis, the great cities of the world. But yeah, this is the summit that actually was being referenced in the previous program concerning a new concept, Mideast peace. We'll see how that goes. And he was giving an address to whoever was listening or just summing up what happened. Yeah, like he had anything to do with it. And he was wearing these little spectacles. And it made him look halfway intelligent. Well, I guess the reason is because it implies, reading glasses imply that one reads. And that would be the first clue that such an activity was on his daily schedule, or even a weekly schedule. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting look for him. Let's hope it doesn't catch on, because then people might actually start thinking positively that this guy actually has a brain. I know, I'm being harsh, but you know, I think we've all earned the right to be harsh. I don't have to tell you all the things that have happened in the past 7 years, and God knows what's going to happen in the year ahead. This guy knows. This guy is well aware. Vladimir Putin. Now, this guy's no saint. Don't get me wrong. This guy is no saint. But when he gets angry at the states, I'm kind of on the sidelines cheering a little bit. Because obviously the states have no idea how to deal with him, and they're scared. We're all scared of him. His middle name is Lucifer. President Vladimir Putin basically said, you know, I'm not going to be president anymore. I'm not going to run for another term. And he let that sit for a few months and said, but however, I'm not averse to being prime minister. So it's just going from one set of shoes to another and remaining in power one sense or another. It's like Musharraf in Pakistan. Okay, he's no longer head of the army, but he's still president and dictator for life if he has his way. Doesn't really make that much difference. Anyway, Putin has accused the United States of trying to taint the legitimacy of upcoming Russian parliamentary elections by pressing a group of prominent independent election observers to abandon their attempts to monitor the campaign, basically saying, don't monitor the elections. I'm not quite sure what the rationale behind that is. It sounds kind of bizarre. He says, according to information we have, this was done at the recommendation of the U.S. State Department, and we will take this into account in our interstate relations with this country. Their goal is the delegitimization of the elections. Do they really have a word in Russian like delegitimization? Oh, I know they have words much longer than that, but just curious if it takes the same form. I'm sorry. Yeah, the goal is delegitimization of the elections. They will not achieve even this goal. And Mr. Putin later added that if Russia maintained strong armed forces, quote, we will not allow anyone to poke their snotty nose into our affairs, unquote. Ho ho! It's on, man. It is on. This is where it gets good. Poking snotty noses into our affairs. These are like North Korean type insults, where they really make them all grandiose and throwing in all kinds of cool references there. But man, he is angry. He is angry at the States. Who isn't angry at the States right now? I'd like to know. I honestly can't think of one country that is not rolling their eyes. And let's see what else is going on in the world. All kinds of things, as always, in this circus of a planet that we have. Oh, this is crazy. This is insane. In one of our favorite countries, Sudan, a British teacher has been arrested for insulting faith and religion. Why is it faith and religion can never be insulted? Why, if you have so much faith in your religion, shouldn't your religion be able to stand up to an insult? But no, you say the most mild criticism. Sometimes you don't even know yourself that you're insulting Islam, or you're insulting Catholicism, or you're insulting Judaism, or whatnot. I probably insulted all three just by saying them all in the same sentence. Who knows? But yet, even though you don't know you've insulted them, the most devout worshippers do, and they have a special guidebook for what to do when someone does that. Anyway, what this poor person did, 54-year-old teacher, Gillian Gibbons, she's being held by police in Sudan's capital, which is? Hands? Anyone? Oh, come on. Nobody knows? I'm looking at the devices. Nobody is getting this right. That's insane. All right. It's Khartoum. That's spelled Khartoum. Yeah, study for next week, all right? We should know all the capitals. Khartoum, the capital of Sudan. And she has not yet been charged. However, she is facing all kinds of penalties. Basically, this is what she did. She allowed her class of seven-year-old kids, to name a teddy bear Mohammed. Yeah. No, that's it. That's all. Not the Prophet Muhammad, just Muhammad. Isn't that a common name? Aren't a lot of people named Muhammad? It only becomes an insult if you're a teddy bear. I just want to understand the rationale behind the insult so that I don't inadvertently insult religions, teddy bears, people. It's insane. Anyway, reports say, yes, that could be seen as an insult to the Prophet Muhammad. I don't understand. This Prophet Muhammad, I mean, the guy can take care of himself. I mean, if he were still alive. But his memory, you can insult all kinds of superhuman creatures. Superman, for instance. Batman, Spider-Man, you can insult them. In our culture, you can insult these characters. Yet usually they kill you in the end. But they're the ones doing it. Not trying to compare Batman and Spider-Man to Prophet Muhammad. Oh, God, I've gotten myself into a lot of trouble, haven't I? How do I get out of this? Well, okay, let's go back to the story. Blasphemy, which is what this this could, in fact, be, is punishable with 40 lashes. 40 lashes. Now, mind you, I don't know what a single lash is like. There's lashes, and then there's lashes, you know? And some of them are the kind where someone smacks you and you say, wow, that hurt, do that again. And then there are the kind where, you know, you feel like you're going to pass out after only one. I'm not sure which of these. Now I'm making fun of lashes. I'm sorry. Does anybody get upset if I insult the concept of lashing somebody? She's facing, 54-year-old teacher facing 40 lashes. Basically, what she did was she asked the kids to pick a name for the bear as part of a lesson on animal habits at a high school named Unity High School. They have a high school named Unity High School, but don't try naming teddy bears Muhammad there. The naming of the bear, according to the British Embassy, yeah, they've gotten involved in this, as well they should, I guess. The naming of the bear did not cause immediate trouble. The children chose the name because, yes, it's a very common name. And it happened back in September. And the parents didn't have a problem with it. So, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but basically she was arrested on Sunday at her home on school grounds. I guess she lives on school grounds. After a number of parents made a complaint to Sudan's Minister of Education. So, I don't know, they got together and said, hey, you know, we can cause some trouble here if we just complain about this, even though we've known about it since September. She also faces 3 months in prison. Incredible. Family spokeswoman said, I've spoken with her children. They do not want to say anything and aggravate the situation over there. Nobody wants to say anything. Nobody wants to aggravate the situation. Sometimes situations need to be aggravated. Sometimes you need to draw cartoons. Sometimes you need to speak out and say, this is stupid. It doesn't matter who's behind it. If the emperor has no clothes, you got to say something. Maybe from a safe distance, but you got to say something. Anyway, what's going on in Japan? I've gotten a lot of mail on this, actually. Japan has started fingerprinting and photographing all foreigners who arrive there. Yeah, it's happening. Fingerprinting and photographs are being taken. It's a crackdown on, you guessed it, terrorists, despite complaints that the measures unfairly target non-Japanese. Nearly all foreigners aged 16 or over, including longtime residents, will be scanned. Yeah, I just wonder, what does that accomplish? People who have lived there for decades, because they're not Japanese, they have to be scanned and fingerprinted. Doesn't really seem like an attack on terrorists. And what about terrorists who come from inside the country? And what exactly do you get by having everybody's picture and fingerprints? Doesn't make them any less of a terrorist if they are one. Anyway, according to an immigration official, there are people who change their names, use wrongly obtained passports, and pretend to be other people. The measure also works as a deterrent. The fingerprints and photos will be checked from matches on terrorist watch lists and files on foreigners with criminal records in Japan. People matching the data will be denied entry and deported. Japan is the second country to implement such a system. Yes, you guessed it. The first country is the United States of America. And Brazil had been doing it, but they stopped with the fingerprinting anyway. Critics say the measures discriminate against foreigners and violate their privacy. A group of nearly 70 civic groups from around the world delivered a letter of protest to Justice Minister Kunio Hatoyama, saying, we believe that your plans are a gross and disproportionate infringement upon civil liberties, copying the most ineffective, costly, and risky practices on border management from around the world. Immigration officials say the Bureau, at least they're honest here, the Bureau plans to store the data for a long time. That's a quote, a long time, without saying how long that actually is. Oh, boy. And this is kind of a cool story, actually. I don't know what people think about this. Basically, Barack Obama is admitting he actually smoked pot. and that he inhaled. Oh, this is daring. For Democrats, this is almost considered suicide. But yeah, earlier, last week actually, in New Hampshire, Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama spoke candidly about his past experimentation with drugs and alcohol in high school. And on Saturday, after a question on medicinal marijuana, Obama was prodded a bit further and asked whether or not he had ever inhaled. "I did," the senator from Illinois said, to light applause. "It's not something I'm proud of. It was a mistake as a young man." I guess he had to say that. I mean, I'd say it's a mistake if you're doing it all the time and if it runs your life. But trying something different when you're growing up and experimenting, why does that have to be a mistake? Why does that have to be something you're not proud of? Some of my proudest moments have come with a joint in my... Well, okay, fine. I'm not going to go into details, but it's nothing to be ashamed of. You're not less of a person for trying things. You're less of a person if you do stupid things as a result. You're less of a person if you lose touch with yourself and are dependent on anything or anyone. Yeah, that's true. A lot of people are addicted to other people, and I think that's unhealthy as well. Anyway, the question was a reference to a line made famous by former President Bill Clinton, who, while admitting to trying marijuana, said he did not inhale. To this day, that just blows me over. I can't believe anybody could actually say that with a straight face and expect anyone to hear that with a straight face. Anyway, Obama said, "I never understood that line. The point was to inhale." That was the point. This guy gets it. You get the feeling that he's going to do a minimal amount of sugarcoating his past and might actually be open to listening to other perspectives. It's not an endorsement, but I'm impressed. But here's the reaction. On the campaign trail on Saturday, GOP White House hopeful Mitt Romney said Obama's earlier comments set a bad example for young people. Yeah, because lying is so much more of a better example, isn't it? Romney says, "I agree with the sentiment that nobody's perfect, and most of us, if not all of us, in our youthful years, have engaged in various indiscretions we wouldn't want to have paraded in the front of a newspaper." That's the former Massachusetts governor saying this. "On the other hand, if we're running for president, I think it's important for us not to go into details about the weaknesses and our own failings as young people for the concern that we open kids thinking that it's okay for them." How about saying a sentence properly? This is George W. Bush style. Maybe it's a typo, but it says, "for the concern that we open kids thinking that it's okay for them." Maybe that makes sense. I don't know. Why is that a bad thing? Why is that a bad thing to actually be honest and go into detail as to the things you did as a child, as a young adult, even as a middle-aged adult? Why must it be hidden? A lot of times people get angry and act out against what they consider to be hypocrisy. Anyway, on the issue of medicinal marijuana, Obama said that if the best way to relieve pain and suffering is through medicinal marijuana, then it's something he's open to. Should be an interesting campaign coming up. Of course, Clinton, wife of a guy who didn't inhale, wants no part of this. But wow. Honest reactions. Maybe there's hope. Okay, I'd like to take phone calls today. Actually, next week is a special program. We're going to do the Brazil show next week. It's going to be a slightly abbreviated show. So we have that to look forward to, but that means we won't be able to take phone calls then. So I'd like to take some phone calls tonight at 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Maybe in about, 10 minutes or so, we can open up the phone lines. But again, you know, people have to be out there. Everyone calls up when they download the show later on. And of course, you confuse people here because I'm no longer on the air. You have to call when I'm on the air. We haven't figured out time travel yet, and it just makes it a whole lot easier. What is all this with tasers all of a sudden? Everyone's using tasers left and right. And doesn't it seem obvious that these devices are dangerous? Sure seems that way to me. A 20-year-old man died on Sunday after being shot with a taser device during a scuffle with a sheriff's deputy in Maryland. Deputies responding to a report of a fight in progress arrived at the location in Frederick, Maryland just before 5 a.m. and found four people fighting. A deputy used a taser device on one of the men who fell unconscious. He was taken to Frederick Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. His identity was not immediately released, pending the notification of his family. Amnesty International has reported that since June 2001, more than 150 people have died in the United States after being subdued with a stun gun. The organization has called for police departments to suspend use of the devices pending study of their possible risks, which should have been done in the first place. More than 7,000 of the nation's 18,000 law enforcement agencies use these devices. And it goes beyond this country. In Canada, there's been particularly horrendous incidents. Okay, here's the most recent one. A Canadian man died on Saturday, 4 days after police used a taser stun gun on him because he reportedly was acting erratically in a store. Oh my God, he's acting erratically in a store. We have to stun him. That'll fix him right up. What happened to police being there to protect people and to help people? Instead, their role seems to be increasingly to subdue people and control them and intimidate and sometimes kill. It's not what the job is supposed to call for. Anyway, he was the third person to die in recent weeks in Canada after being shocked by the handheld weapon. Robert Nipstrom, 36 years old, died in the hospital after two officers used pepper spray, a taser, and their batons to subdue the British Columbia resident. Police earlier said he was extremely agitated, aggressive, and combative with the two officers who responded. He was conscious and speaking when he was taken to the hospital. The cause of death has yet to be determined. So maybe the taser wasn't entirely at fault. But I gotta say, these things are being used as crutches so much now. I mean, we all saw the thing with the guy who wanted to ask a question to one of the Democratic presidential candidates and went on too long and got tased as a result of that. Is it tased or tasered? I think I've heard both, but tasered. I mean, what is the point? You can subdue somebody with, how about this? How about more people than the person is? In other words, one person acting disruptively in some manner, two or three people can easily control that one person most of the time. Yeah, there are exceptions, but that was clearly not one of them. And I've seen how cops swarm on any kind of incident whatsoever. And the vast majority of cases, people are easily subdued just by physical force, not by using weaponry. But the case that really has the country of Canada in shock is what happened at the airport with that Polish immigrant that came in, Robert Zikanski. Basically, what happened was, this happened in October. Zikanski and his mother were separated for hours by a matter of meters as he was on one side of the international arrivals area and his mother waited on the other side. Basically, the Canadian Border Services Agency, CBSA, lost track of Zikanski for more than 6 hours. He arrived at 3:20 p.m. on October 13th and was processed through primary inspection at 4:09 p.m., he wasn't again identified until 10:40 p.m., and that's when he tried to exit the hall. At that point, a CBSA officer advised him he needed to go to secondary and directed him toward that area. Now, keep in mind that Mr. Szczekanski spoke little or no English, and a Polish interpreter was not readily available, even though it later turned out one was and had never been contacted. A report that was issued said 4,000 people went through the area during the time Szczekanski was unaccounted for. Szczekanski, who spoke no English, wandered the halls of the airport for 9 hours, principally in the customs area, under the jurisdiction of the CBSA, before becoming upset and disoriented. How dare he? 9 hours. People wait for years to get into this country, or that country. Sorry, wrong country. But still, it's insane. And as documented in a video now seen by millions around the world, thank God for video, four police officers approached Szczekanski, tasered him, subdued him, and were sitting on him when his heart stopped in the early morning hours of October 14th. I mean, is it so unreasonable to assume that someone is going to get a little bit combative if they're kept waiting without any kind of explanation? Everyone snaps at some point. And if you try and understand the situation, rather than just act with brute force, you might actually have a chance of resolving it. Anyway, a moratorium on taser use by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police should be imposed until everyone is assured that officers issued the weapons are properly trained, says Senator Colin Kenney. The appropriate time to use them is when someone is threatened or someone is in danger, according to the chair of the Senate Defense and National Security Committee. He said the police may wish to consider a different type of taser. There are tasers that actually record a picture of what the taser is aiming at, and they record it on a little tape, and they record the sound. This would make the officer think twice before using the taser and would give a reviewing officer a record of what happened. Now, it's interesting. This showed up on a Canadian site for one of their networks, CTV, ctv.ca. And listen to some of the reactions. Basically, these guys have a little message board where people can comment on the news stories. It's not as bad as the redneck board. Did I say redneck? I meant to say the Newsday board. The Newsday board is taken over by rednecks. I'm sorry. It is. Because if you look, what happens is the system identifies you by your location, by where you are based on your IP. And more times than not, the people are in Texas, Virginia, Kentucky, all over the place. Not Long Island. There are people on Long Island, and there are rednecks on Long Island. We have a very proud redneck community here, but it's just not representative of the community. But more on that later. Maybe. The reactions here to this story of someone daring to say, yeah, these things need to be used less frequently. You ever had to take someone down who was HIV or hepatitis positive? In this day and age, people who don't comply can be a threat. While I agree that a taser review is definitely in order, I think the cheaper alternative is, why not stop breaking the law? Oh my God. Breaking the law. Becoming a bit angry because you kept waiting for 9 hours and no explanation. That's called breaking the law. Not obeying an order immediately. Questioning somebody. Breaking the law, you deserve to die. And you are saying you deserve to die. Because these tasers are killing people. There's no question about it. So when you use it on somebody, there is a chance they are going to have a bad reaction to it. Another person says, this is not a good idea unless they get to shoot the bastards instead. The taser protects the RCMP. And this guy says, great, so now our officers are going to have to get hurt before they can use their approved weapons. Why don't we start arming them with silly string and slingshots? Wait, they're both dangerous too. Never mind. I have an idea. Let's give the RCMP an impossible task, then give them crap for doing it. Sound Canadian? Sure does. Okay, you guys have some interesting discussions going on up there. But here's what I consider to be a rather reasoned approach. I am retired RCMP, and I see absolutely no positive use from this taser device. When I was in the force, we did not even have pepper spray and managed to do things just fine. These weapons should be taken away from all police as they are just bully weapons and are being used in exactly that fashion. It's obvious the RCMP are not responsible enough to have them. Maybe we should also be taking away their firearms, like police in Newfoundland and the UK. Then you would see the real people who are not on some sort of ego trip because they have that gun on their side actually be police officers. Bet you'd have a whole different set of psychological profiles for applicants if that happened. People who are actually there for the right reasons. The moratorium will only do any good if it results in a complete ban. Letting them have time to get better training, well, that's just a joke. Take them away. Bravo. Bravo. And it's interesting because the whole reference to cops in Newfoundland and the United Kingdom and other parts of the world not having guns. Of course, we can't even conceive of such a thing here. It's suicide. But it actually does change the dynamic quite a bit. For instance, I just visited my friend in prison in Ohio a couple of weeks ago, and I was surprised to find out that the prison guards there don't carry guns. I figured they all had guns all the time. And no, apparently the mentality, at least in that particular place, was that if you give the prison guards guns, then there's a possibility a prisoner could get his hands on one. So you don't give lethal weapons. I'm sure lethal weapons exist someplace in the facility, but you don't walk around with them. Now, obviously, the real world is different than prison, but that mentality can also be constructive, I think. And if we want to think of cops as heroes, then yeah, they're going to have to take a few risks occasionally. They're not taking any risks when they're walking around in suits of armor and able to shoot first and ask questions later, and not even have questions asked of them half the time. It's 1 year after Sean Bell, and we still have yet to see any kind of prosecution. That's a whole other story right there. Now, we all saw the video. I think we all saw the video. A couple of you didn't? Well, most of you did. Of the guy getting tasered after being pulled over? This happened somewhere in this country a few months ago, and he was able to actually get a copy of the videotape that was being shot from the police car. And for some reason, the cop didn't get that one erased. Usually they do. And you see clearly the guy basically getting out of his car to point to a speed limit sign or something, not doing anything threatening to the cop. And the cop screaming at him at the top of his lungs and then pointing a weapon at him. And you have no way of knowing if it's a real gun or a taser. You have no way of knowing. And the guy just turning around and saying, "What's the matter with you?" And then you see him being shot with the taser, just like that. His wife runs out the passenger side, hysterically screaming. Her husband's just gotten shot by something. Cop screams at her to get back in the car, which she does. I'll tell you, if I was that wife, well, that's an interesting concept, but if I was that person, I think I'd have a lot more of a hard time getting back in the car and following orders after seeing somebody I know and care about get shot for no reason. But yet I see comments. I see comments on the net from I'm sorry, morons, idiots, people who say he deserved what he got. He didn't obey the order. And his wife should have been shot too because she created a dangerous situation by running outside her. I mean, this is insane. The mentality that that people are adapting these days. It's like we're under military occupation. So let's hope that cop never, ever is put in a situation of authority again. It's funny how I don't think he's even been identified. It's incredible how these people are protected. Blackwater people, have they been identified? Has anybody accused of crime who is in a position of authority in this country, are they ever identified? I mean, I'm not saying burning down the police stations like they do in France whenever anything goes wrong. I'm not saying that's the answer, but it certainly seems a more healthy way of expressing yourself than living under fear all the time. You know, if you cross people, they're going to react. And you're not going to be able to put them down with your weaponry. Okay. Meanwhile, speaking of France, the boss of the French company that makes taser stun guns is adamant they are not dangerous and says he should know he's tested them on himself more than 50 times. Apparently this guy's got some rather weird tastes in fun. You cannot call it real pain, said Antoine Desazo, Director General of Taser France. That's their name, huh? Taser France, which makes the 50,000-volt weapons. 50,000 volts. I just found the time was infinitely long. His defense of tasers came as a United Nations committee claimed the weapons constituted a form of torture, saying the stun guns caused extreme pain and in certain cases could also cause death. Mr. Desazo, who said he had been shot many times during tests and demonstrations, insisted they were safe. He said he had also shot far-right politician Jean-Marie Le Pen with a taser. I wonder if he had permission to do that. Now get this, this is what scares me. The company is now developing a drone similar to a mini-flying saucer that could fire taser rounds on criminal suspects or rioting crowds. He expects it to be launched next year. We are moving into such a hellish existence. You know these things are going to be used on peaceful demonstrators. Little flying saucers flying above their heads and sending 50,000 volts into the crowd. All in the name of safety. And to the vast majority of us SUV-driving, big-gulp-guzzling morons, that's just fine and dandy. Because it's keeping us safe. It's keeping those people who cause trouble away from us. Very, very, very scary. All right. And then, of course, we have this whole gun thing, which is coming up. We talked about this a little bit last week. Supreme Court is going to be looking into gun restrictions. Here's an editorial, actually, that ran in Newsday, our local newspaper, our local daily newspaper that's got all the rednecks commenting on their board. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's what the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment says. Last week, the Supreme Court agreed to decide what it means. It could be the most far-reaching decision on guns in almost 70 years. That's when the High Court rejected the notion of an individual right to possess guns for purposes unrelated to state militias. 70 years ago. That 1939 decision allowed room for the federal government, the states, and the District of Columbia to regulate and restrict gun ownership, and that has frustrated gun rights advocates ever since. The case the court agreed to hear next March challenges D.C.'s 31-year-old handgun ban. The Supreme Court shouldn't reverse this settled law, a ruling that establishes a precedent for an individual's constitutional right to possess guns would open the floodgates and drown the courts in challenges of the existing rational restrictions on gun ownership, and a sweeping decision could mean that the nation would soon be awash in ever more firearms. With an estimated 192 million privately owned guns already in the country, that we don't need. Well, I consider that a rather well-reasoned editorial on the part of Newsday, and would you know, the last time I checked, the comments that came after that, 100%, not a single person voicing an opposite opinion, 100% condemned these remarks. Yeah, in all kinds of angry tones. It's just incredible how people cling to this so much. And you have to ask yourself, what is so important about these firearms? It's got nothing to do with freedom or speech. It really doesn't. Because if it did, people would be doing something about all the freedom and speech we've lost so far. I mean, look around you. Look at all the things that no longer exist. You wind up getting searched everywhere. You wind up having your affiliations questioned. It's okay for the government to spy on your phone conversations and your email without a warrant. All kinds of things are happening today. Go to any city. Look at the federal building. Look at the barricades around it. Government is not accessible to people anymore. Aren't these things to get upset about? And for some reason, no, that's okay. That's okay. We're going to allow our First Amendment rights to be taken away as long as we get to hold on to those guns. What exactly are these guns going to do for you? Protect you against the other people with guns. I guess that's really the only thing. There's nothing more noble that I can see as an argument. I wish people would just admit this. Here's a letter that we got, otw@2600.com, which addresses some of these issues. I'm listening to last Tuesday's Off the Wall, and as usual, I disagree with you on this one topic. I agree with you that times have changed since the Bill of Rights was written, and that it is less and less likely that privately born arms would be able to regulate the militia of the country. Nevertheless, outlawing guns is not the solution to the ills of society that cause gun violence. Okay, two things in that sentence there. Listen to what I have said over the years. Outlawing guns, there was never the point here. It's never the goal. I mean, guns are for everyone. Guns are great fun. They're family-oriented tools that anybody can have. Dad can have a nice rifle. Mom can have a little pistol that she keeps under her pillow. And Junior can have, a nice sidearm revolver or something. Everyone has one tailor-made for them. That's not the issue. The issue is some kind of regulation to make sure these things, A, aren't being handed out like free food, and B, that people take some responsibility when they actually do something with them. I don't think anybody's suggesting that there is a solution to the ills of society that cause gun violence. There's not one solution, but there are steps you can take. Okay, continuing with this letter here. The idyllic countries you mention are safe because of social justice or because of repression. I'm sure you favor the former. Well, you know, we've got some repression here. Not a whole lot of social justice. We have some occasionally. But I think it's got mostly to do with just the way people think. The attitude. That's what really has to be addressed. I think we might even agree on this. Continuing, in a free society, those who do not see a way out other than crime will use archery, knives, or many other martial skills if they do not have access to guns. When's the last time you saw a school shooting that involved, or a school massacre, or an attack in a mall that involved martial arts? That would be something. That would be amazing. And video games don't count. Pretty incredible. Yeah, I mean, people would use different weaponry, but it wouldn't be nearly as effective. Wouldn't be nearly as easy. We need to solve the cause rather than attacking just one of the symptoms. I totally agree with that. On the other hand, banning weapons just opens another front for organized crime. Prohibition failed, and the war on drugs is a joke. Enterprising people will supply what people want. The war on smoking, I never heard it said that way, the war on smoking is a slightly better model, as it has mostly focused on reducing demand and on outlawing acts that affect others. Very good point there. The war on smoking. Let's look at the war on smoking. I used to hang out with friends of mine who were zealots as far as smoking cigarettes, even when they knew that it bothered the people around them. I remember only 10 years ago, if I was with people, and one of my friends was a smoker, we wanted to go out somewhere and get food. We could not go to a place that didn't allow smoking at the table. But smoking pollutes the air. It bothers. It makes it hard to breathe. I want to smoke. I have the right to smoke. That outweighed the right to breathe, apparently. Things have changed. Now, I know a lot of people aren't very happy with it. Well, no, not a lot of people. I think most people are happy with it, but there are some who are still grumbling. But things have changed. We have a more healthy society. We're thinking about breathing more than we're thinking about the right of somebody to give themselves a horrible disease or just make things unpleasant. Attitudes change, and that's what needs to change here. But how is it done? It was done through making it economically impossible for a lot of people to continue the habit, and by further restricting over and over again until it became very inconvenient. Now, if it had simply been banned outright, yeah, there'd be all kinds of black markets for cigarettes, and they'd probably be more popular than ever. So the attitude, the way the war on smoking, as you say, was played out. I think it makes a lot more sense. How about a war on weaponry? Yeah, you don't ban the weapons. You don't ban things that people use for various legitimate purposes. But you make it a lot harder for people to just hand these things out like candy. And people who cause real problems with these things, they should be called to account for them. Anyway, continuing with this letter here. While I may never own a gun, I don't understand what benefit society would get by keeping me from having one. Again, I don't see anyone saying you will be forbidden from owning something. Certain communities, certain cities, like Washington, D.C., New York City, I believe, is another. It's the people who do not want this. You live in a certain neighborhood, you play by the rules. You don't like it, you can move to another neighborhood. And by the way, New York City has the lowest murder rate now in 40 years. Now, I know there are a lot of guns in New York City, a lot of unauthorized guns. But as far as people walking around packing heat, that's not allowed. We don't want that in New York City. And do you know how many murders there were in, this year, actually. Okay, they're keeping it up to date. This year, do you know how many murders there were in New York City of people who were not already familiar with the people who murdered them? In other words, you know, if it's your husband or wife that kills you, all right, that's unfortunate, and I feel bad for you, but it's not a murder by just a random person shooting another random person. Not the kind of thing that New York has this reputation for some reason. Okay, so how many for the entire year in New York City? 35. That's it. 35. Now, I think if everyone was walking around with guns and every time somebody cut somebody off in a car or said something nasty to somebody else, it'd be gunfire exchanged. I think those numbers would be a lot higher. So this is evidence to me that you don't need to be packing heat in order to have a safe city. Anyway, finishing off this letter here. Why do we let people vote or even drive if they can't be trusted to obey the laws with whatever objects they own? Signed, Daniel. Daniel, thanks for that letter. And a lot of good points you made. But you bring up an interesting part of this whole thing. Why do we let people vote or even drive? Well, you know, both of those activities, voting and driving, are very heavily regulated. You have to identify yourself in each of those. You have to know who the people are that are registering, either to own a car, to drive a car, to vote. And that's considered for the better of society. And yet, when you even suggest something like that involving gun ownership, like, you know, people don't want to register their guns, they don't want to be listed, or they don't want people to know that they have enough arms to feed an army, then you get all kinds of crazy reactions. And I just have to wonder why. We've already proven that they're not going to have any effect on protecting this nation against people who would repress the people. It's not going to do a damn thing for that. I think it's about people who just want to have cool toys, and that's fine. But they have to be used responsibly. All right. And here's another letter. Looks like we're not going to have time for phone calls. I didn't see any phone calls coming in. I'm sorry. Going into delay is a real problem. I have to come out of delay. If I see three lights light up in the remaining 3 minutes before we have to start getting out of here, I'll go into delay and take the calls. 631-632-9872. Oh, I see two. All right, you know, hopefully this isn't somebody with a multi-line phone just causing me grief, but one more light has to light up, and then we'll take calls, or try to take calls. This ought to be interesting. Still only two calls. Let's read this letter here. You guys got to stay on, too, until the end of the letter. I've recently started listening to your two shows and just wanted to write you an email. I first off wanted to send my condolences out to your comrade Jim, who recently suffered from a stroke. My uncle, who was formerly an employee of a chip manufacturing company in Silicon Valley, also recently suffered from a stroke. From what you've described, it sounds as if Jim is going through exactly the same agony by not being able to express himself in a manner anywhere near where he used to be able to. For my uncle, he has slowly been regaining the ability to construct logical sentences and maintain solid trains of thought, although he still has a far way to go and unfortunately will most likely not return to his former ability. Anyway, I just wanted to relate that, and thanks for relating that. Also, in your most recent episode of Off the Wall, you mentioned visiting your friend who is currently in prison. I noticed that you expressed how important visits are to people who are locked up, and that's something I wholeheartedly agree with. I was recently released from federal prison, and luckily I was incarcerated a few hours away from where my family lives. It was their monthly visits that helped keep me going through my stay in Uncle Sam's retreat. It really gives someone who's locked up fuel to keep going when they're able to chat with a friendly face for a couple of hours. In my case, it was 6.5 hours. I thought it was awesome of you to take time away from your busy schedule to go and visit your friend. I'm sure he very much appreciated it. Well, it was fun for both of us, actually. I like that you brought up the upcoming case with the Supreme Court as well. Even though it sounds like you and I have different feelings towards gun laws, I can very much agree that we are not moving towards a solution. Great work on your shows. Even though I've only been listening a few weeks, I was able to play a couple of your shows to my dad and brother, and they are also now regular listeners. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much. From Teleprompzor. Teleprompzor. I guess people are making up names now that all the names are taken, right? All right. Still only two calls. What am I going to do? All right, let me try this. All right, I'm going to try this. Hopefully I won't mess it up too badly.
Hi, this is Joan Jett from the Blackhearts, and you're right.
And let's see, am I in delay?
Stony Brook, 90.1.
Yeah, you know what? I made the same mistake I made all the other times. Okay. I'm gonna try to take a phone call now. Obviously, I'm in delay, but I'm just a little bit confused. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, I'm on the air now?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, Emmanuel, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Gonna have to make it fast, though.
Okay. I just had a question for you. At what age do you think that someone should be required to stop driving?
To stop driving? Well, how about the age where they don't pass their yearly driving exam?
Not good enough.
We don't have yearly driving exams, though.
Right. But we were in a car the other night, and we were involved in an accident that was caused by a 93-year-old man. And I thought, there's got to be a point where the state says, no, we don't blanket give licenses to people over a certain age.
Okay, but how do you know it's because he was 93 that was, I mean, isn't it possible that somebody who's 93 who can drive perfectly well, and isn't it also possible that somebody who's 63 who can't?
Yeah, but I think, you know, we don't allow 14-year-olds to drive, even though they may be able to drive. We have a requirement that they be 17 or 18 on that end.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to look at the other end and say, maybe 85, time to make other arrangements for your transportation. You're not going to be getting into a car and endangering everybody else on the road. We were lucky nobody got killed. We were lucky, apparently no serious injuries, but there was a collision involving
several
cars.
I do agree with your point that we should be evaluated, and age obviously plays more and more of a factor. And if it reaches a point where your age is outweighing your ability, then yeah, you shouldn't be able to drive anymore. But I don't think we should just set a number and say this is the number where you can no longer drive, because it applies to different people in different ways. I'm sorry, though. We're going to have to leave it there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care, because we're out of time, and unfortunately that's the only call we'll be able to take, but at least we were able to take one phone call. And here we are back live again. That was fun. That was fun. Maybe next time, in 2 weeks, we'll be able to take more phone calls. Maybe we'll start earlier. Next week, our special Brazil program, abbreviated program, and in 2 weeks we'll be back talking about all kinds of issues. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Stands the city of Sire. okay. We'll meet on Tuesday.
Hey, it's Finn, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook. This is Finn's Revolution.
Frozen guitar next to your sweetheart.